Welcome back to Technically Economics. I'm Dominic.
I'm Cassidy.
And we are two econ PhD students at Harvard coming to you from the Cambridge Public Library.
In case this is your first episode with us, on each episode of this podcast, either Dominic or I brings a topic of discussion and tries to convince the other one that that topic technically counts as economics.
And today, I think it is your turn to try to convince me that something is economics.
It is my turn. It is my turn, and I'm very excited.
I'm a little nervous because when I went last episode, and
yes.
I gave you a lot of sort of pre-reading materials.
Yes.
For this one, I got basically
I've given you
nothing.
Yes.
So I'm a little, I have no idea what's coming.
Yes. I think we're going to have fun today.
Okay.
To start off, I have a question for you, Dominic.
Okay.
Which is, have you ever gotten really into some, like, niche YouTube subgenre of video?
I feel like the, like, Gen Z, so I'm technically a millennial. I think I'm the elder. Yeah, I think
this
is a big divide in this podcast. So I feel like I'm not a huge, like, sit down and watch, like, YouTube shows kind of person. I will say I have gone... I went to the University of Michigan, big Michigan football fan. I've gone down the Michigan football hype video thing where, like, people create videos being like, we have this big game, you know, against Ohio State.
I've never heard of this before.
I also
went to a Big Ten school.
The hype video game is sweet. I mean, it's like probably mostly 12-year-olds, like, at home on their computer, and they, like, clip together a bunch of, like, highlights and things and put, like, some, like, dramatic music to it.
Okay.
And it's just to get... I guess it's to get me hyped to sit on my couch for 3 hours. But, like, before a big game, I will spend, you know, I feel like it's like one of those things where it's like 2 p.m. You don't really want to be doing what you're doing at work or grad school. And so you're like, well, why don't I just watch a hype video, no?
I see.
I don't know if that's what you were looking
for. Are
the
12-year-olds in the hype videos?
No.
They're just clips with music.
From the game with music. Yeah. Kind of dramatic. To get you hyped, I feel like it's in the
yeah.
Game.
No,
I feel like a crazy person saying this out loud. Yeah.
Okay, today we are talking about marble racing.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of marble racing before, or watched any marble racing videos on YouTube?
I have never watched them.
Okay.
I have heard of them.
Okay.
I can't remember. Maybe my brother was telling me about them. I know someone, and then I had a conversation with. A co-author whose kids are very into marble racing.
Okay.
And yeah, we talked about that a little bit.
Okay. So let's watch a little bit of one together. I've got one pulled up on my computer here,
okay.
And we're just gonna watch some
of it. I'm gonna move the microphone.
Yes. Okay. And the mic is gonna pick up some of the sound, but it's probably not gonna be that good.
Okay.
The stands are packed, and we are proud to welcome you to the...
The stands are packed with marbles. I love it so much.
Four
oh, my God.
For 12 qualification spots in this year's
This is event. Amazing.
Oceanics, the Rangers, Midnight Wisps, and the Savage Speeders are already qualified based on their finishing positions.
Oh, and we're seeing, a crazy marble track now. It's like an eight-level... funnel marble track.
Yes.
We're going to have to put this in the show notes for...
Yeah, we are going to have a lot of show notes for this episode.
Okay, so the marbles have been released. Oh, there's a bunch of marbles going on this track.
Yes, and so it's the race is like you want to be the last marble standing.
Oh!
You want to go down the track as slowly as possible, actually.
I see. And so they're like funneling down and you want to be the last one in the funnel.
Yes, they're funneling down a series of eight funnels.
Wow.
I think you got the idea.
Yeah.
I can see that Dominic is kind of fixated by the video.
It does feel like properly... random in like a way that would be very fun as like, you know, like a sport, but one that is just totally random, I think. I don't know.
Okay, so Dominic, could you describe for people who are not going to watch the video a little bit about like what the video looks like, kind of the production value of what we were seeing there?
I mean, super high production value. Like they made it look like if you've watched like a World Cup broadcast.
Yes.
So they had announcers and stuff, panned to the crowd, they had different countries. They had like the, I forget what it's called, but like the graphics on the screen that show you the place of different marbles. It was extremely high production value.
Yeah. We saw these stands, like stadium stands where you would have people in the stands. They just had little marbles in rows. Yeah. So what we watched is from Marble League 2019, which is an elaborate marble racing competition put on by Yella's Marble Runs.
Okay.
And so I want to talk a little bit about how we got here with marble racing.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to be doing kind of a lot of talking this episode.
It's all right. I will feel free to interrupt you.
You interrupt me as you see fit.
Okay.
So the reason that we are both aware of marble racing is really because of two Dutch brothers, Jelle and Dion Bakker.
Okay.
I got a Dutch consult on the name pronunciation.
Oh, nice.
So I'm
hoping
I'm doing okay there.
Yeah.
So Jelle is a hobbyist who enjoys making elaborate marble runs. And around 2006, he started making these YouTube videos of his setups and putting them on a YouTube channel.
2006.
Jelle's Marble Runs. 2006.
Okay.
He actually had like a Guinness World Record for a couple of years for the world's longest marble run. Pretty cool.
How long is the world's
longest? My research didn't go that deep. But I think he no longer holds the record.
Oh,
so,
wow.
It's a tight space.
Do you think it's longer or shorter than a football field? It's got to be way longer, right?
I gotta imagine longer, but
yeah.
I couldn't say.
How long?
But it could be the kind of thing where just no one was really competing in this space until he was.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's not as long as you think, but.
Yeah. Longer or shorter than an Olympic-sized track? 400 meters.
Shorter. Is my guess.
So between, yeah.
And there's no way that we could Google it. So we're just going to have to, you know, get in the comments with your guess.
Yeah.
And so he's just doing like marble runs. And then around 2015, Yella's brother Dion has the idea to do this format that we watched of marble races, where we have many different colored marbles racing on the same track. And this is the format that like really blows up.
Okay.
And gets a huge following. So they start doing what they call the Marble Olympics, which becomes Marble League. We later see a variety of marble racing formats, including Marbula One, which the marbles race around a circuit.
They have fire puns, I feel like, if nothing else.
And Marble Rally, in which the marbles do off-road races on different kinds of terrain.
What is off-road for marbles?
Like dirt. And stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
How do they? I mean, I guess if it's sloped down, they fall enough.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I didn't watch all of the types of videos, but yeah, and like fandoms develop for different marble colors. So
yeah,
there's like the mellow yellows, the midnight wisps, the pinkies. People get very into these.
That makes a lot of sense. I feel like we like the randomness of sports and this. I mean. When I was watching that video, I was already like, I want the orange one to win, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like that develops very naturally. Yeah.
The video we watched also had voiceover doing like very serious sounding commentary on the race. That was Greg Woods, who was an early kind of fan of the channel and just started doing fan commentary videos over the videos that they were posting.
Also, you said serious sounding. I feel like what makes it serious sounding versus just serious?
Yeah, sorry.
I feel like it is just serious. Yeah.
It is just serious, yeah. But there's like a little tongue-in-cheek, something like that. Then Jelle, who created the videos, saw these fan commentary videos and was like, ah, yes, this is amazing. We should like officially collaborate. And now they do all their videos together officially. And then, to give a little sense of like how much the fandom loves these videos, I thought this was kind of incredible. So in 2018, Jelle accidentally deleted his YouTube channel while trying to delete his Google Plus profile.
Okay.
I don't know if you recall Google Plus.
I do. This is like it was like trying to compete with like Facebook in the early days.
Yes.
I have one somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, be careful if you try to delete it. He just deleted his entire channel, which at that point he'd been building for like 12 years.
Wow.
And had to create a new one from scratch. And within like a year, he had surpassed his previous number of subscribers.
Wow.
At the time of record, the channel has 1.44 million subscribers.
Wow.
So that's Jelle.
Okay.
That's Jelle's Marble Runs.
Yeah.
And to set the stage for where we're going in terms of economics.
Yeah, I was wondering how this was going to get back.
The question we're going to think about is, given the attention capture that marble racing has achieved, what should we as economists expect to happen next?
Okay. Like in the economy writ large? Or?
Like how should we expect kind of economic agents or firms to take advantage of the attention generated by this kind of thing? This isn't
okay.
I'm not looking for an answer on this question
okay,
for you.
Okay.
I'm telling you that's the question I'm planning to answer.
Okay. I'm excited. I'm very excited.
That okay.
I guess feels economics, but
yeah, we'll see. We'll
okay.
see.
Okay.
So the first thing I want to say is probably pretty familiar and is even something we talked about, is close to something we talked about on the Love Island episode.
Okay.
And that's merchandising.
Okay.
So one thing we can think about this Marble Race content is doing is not just like providing entertainment value, which it's definitely doing.
Yeah.
But actually changing people's utility functions or shifting people's demand curves in some way.
Okay.
So I have another question for you.
Okay.
Which is, can you think of a time in recent memory where something you watched or read induced you to buy something that you wouldn't have been interested in buying otherwise?
Interesting. I think, I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but like I have these like white Nikes right now. And I feel like in part this was my wife's urging, but in part it was like I saw a bunch of like, whatever, Gen Z college kids around campus, and they all have like white Nikes and
yeah.
white socks, and
uh-huh.
so I feel like that definitely, like I think that's where I get like my clothing and shoe things. I'm not like very, you know, on the cutting edge of any of that, but I do think I do some like looking around the world, seeing what the youths,
okay.
and the college kids are doing, and doing that.
And can you describe, like, what do you think is the process there that's happening in your brain? Do you think that you are, like, enjoying those white shoes more than you would have sort of before knowing about that's what the cool kids are wearing? Or do you think, like, you just want them to think you're cool and so you're going to do whatever, but it's not really about the value you get from wearing the shoes?
Well, I've never introspected. This is like a, when you start thinking about utility theory too carefully, it all falls apart. I guess for me, it's probably mostly the like conforming thing where like I'm not sure that I actually think they're cooler or better, but I kind of want other people. Like, I think other people think they're cooler and better, and I want other people
yeah,
to
that's
think
like
that
enough.
I'm cool. But I don't know. I don't know if it's entirely that. Like, sometimes I do, yeah, look at my feet and say, like, oh, these are cool. So I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know exactly. I also feel like the other thing I had in mind, which was also similar, like, social thing, but this one I think actually maybe truly did change preferences. I feel like before I moved to Cambridge, I didn't really think at all about bouldering, and then like here everyone's just like it's just like the modal
it's
thing
the
that
lifestyle.
People do on weekends is
yeah.
boulder and I'm still not that into bouldering, but it's like a thing that I think I mean that could also just be like I tried it was kind of fun, so now I enjoy it, but I literally never thought about it now.
Yeah So the idea that I'm kind of getting at here is like inducing demand, like
okay.
what can make you demand something.
Okay.
And I think as a concept, that's definitely really closely tied to advertising. So inducing
yeah.
demand is, you know, exactly what Taco Bell is trying to do when they show us these commercials of like a cheesy Dorito crunchy taco supreme
yeah.
wrap.
Like yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
are wanting us to be like, yes, I want that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is the goal.
Yeah.
But I think what's kind of interesting to notice here is like, so unless you're extremely cynical, I think
yeah.
it's hard to imagine that the goal of these marble racing videos is to induce demand for products.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's, like, almost certainly not the goal, or at least almost certainly wasn't the goal in 2006.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's, like, maybe you're inducing demand for views, but I guess, like, that's just by being entertaining, you want people to do that, and then you can make money from ads and stuff, but
yeah.
not really like some other product or something like that.
Yeah. I think there's a read of this that's like, that is really not their goal, is to like move products.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think it is a byproduct that it generates demand for products.
Okay.
And so I'm going to give you a couple things here. So on the Yellow's Marble Run website. They're selling like hats and t-shirts, like team t-shirts with the different colored marbles. They're selling actual marbles and then like Marble Run constructor kits that you could do, which, I had not really watched these videos before. I watched a couple, and then looking on this website, I was like, it looks kind of cool. It'd be kind of fun to mess around
especially
with one
like
of these.
I said, like, it was my co-author's kids who were watching it, so like if you're a kid and you're, I don't know, I'd like to, you know, you see these crazy tracks, you construct some of them yourselves, it makes sense to sort of be selling the parts too.
Yes, exactly.
Can I ask you an off-topic
question? Ask me a question.
That just made me think about, should we do pod merchandise?
Should we do pod merchandise?
Is this how we should monetize?
I think we can do pod merchandise. How about if we get like 1,000 downloads, we can do merchandise?
Okay. I feel like, listen, by the time this podcast is recorded, we're gonna be well past 1,000.
So I wanted to talk about this a little bit because so I think it's really easy to be cynical about like how creators monetize.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've gone on 1,000 screeds about like Mr. Beast selling chocolate bars to fund his next insane.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of it can be super off-putting to be like, oh, okay, the second a person gains like a little bit of fame, they are just like trying to monetize and like eke every kind of bit of profit out of.
Yeah.
There's like a very negative sense in which you could think like it's really maybe not improving welfare or something that Mr. Beast is like doing that.
And you see that in like a thing that I have watched on YouTube is a lot of these like financial influencer videos.
Yes.
And often they'll start with just like actually giving like, you know, good sort of boring advice.
Yes.
But then like boring advice is hard to monetize. And so eventually they'll be like, join my Discord and I'll like give you stock picks and stuff. So
yeah,
that feels not great. Yeah.
So I think it like is, it's easy to be very cynical and there are like good reasons to be cynical. But I wanted to talk about it here because I think this is actually an example where I would argue that this Marble Run channel is like really creating utility that didn't exist before.
Okay.
Of like, if children are like not knowing about marble racing and then are like watching some videos and then like feeling hyped about it and then like getting a lot of joy out of like using this product that they sort of didn't know to demand.
Yeah.
That is good.
Yeah, it feels, genuinely good and genuinely like, you know, worth exchanging attention or money for or whatever the
There's also this other angle that I have thought a lot about. There's this in progress paper which some of our professors at Harvard Business School are working on where they argue that part of the utility we get out of goods is not just the material experience of actually consuming the good but sort of the emotional experience of the memories that the good calls to mind.
Okay.
So when I wear my marble racing t-shirt for the pinkies or whatever, maybe partly it makes me happy because I like how that shirt looks.
Yeah.
But probably it makes me happy too because it reminds me of, you know, watching marble racing videos with my college friends or something like that.
I mean, that's like two examples that come to mind to me is like one, when sports teams win titles, like everyone buys
the commemorative shirt,
yes, the commemorative DVD, the hat, whatever, gets a tattoo even.
Yes.
And then the other one is like concert t-shirts are a huge thing where it's like not only like there are like band t-shirts, but there are actual like tour t-shirts. Like everyone's wearing a Taylor Swift Eras t-shirt and
exactly
like making it very clear which date they went to in their like Twitter bio and stuff.
I
agree.
Yeah, and, you know, you can, if you want to just be like, well, that's, you know, fully just extracting from these, you know, naive fans or whatever.
No.
But I don't really think that's what's going on. I think the fans are, like, getting value from having products that they can, that evoke.
Makes them remember things that.
All right, so to be clear, I'm painting, like, a pretty rosy picture of what kind of monetization looks like.
Yeah.
And we should also expect that for a creator. So I guess what I'm kind of talking about is given that people like this content, I don't think it's bad.
Yeah.
And I think it's often like really value adding and welfare producing for for a channel like Yellow's Marble Runs to be leaning into it and kind of creating products that help the fan base plug in more and get more excited, more hyped, whatever.
Yeah, and if like selling marble racing tracks helps them produce more and better videos, that like that doesn't feel super bad to me either. But I agree that there's also like there is a spectrum where like that feels good. There is also the bad too. Yeah.
And this is sort of what we're talking about is a little bit of like what I might call partial equilibrium.
Okay.
Of where
we
say,
no.
You know, fixed that this is what they produce and they're kind of, we think they're good people who produce it. I don't know. If someone knows that they're actually bad people, then I hope that's not true. I didn't find anything that looked concerning.
Problematic in their background. Should we define the notion of like partial equilibrium for the listener?
Yes. Do you want to define it?
I was hoping you would define it. So I guess in equilibrium, we think about like the entire economy in some sense. And I guess there can be different definitions of that. But in like the broadest sense, you think about the entire macro economy, all of the firms, all of the consumers, all of the producers.
Yep.
In a lot of economics, we don't want to think about everyone and everything. And so we think about a piece of it. You know, maybe we just think about consumers, or we just think about one firm and how they interact with consumers, or we think about one corner of the market. All of those different things are sort of partial equilibrium. And it matters it matters whether you're thinking about partial or full equilibrium, because there are things that can be true in sort of these smaller corners of the economy that will actually not happen when you think about the bigger corner of the economy. So I guess like, you know, one example of this is like you can imagine a firm does something to try to take advantage of consumers, and if you don't think about the other firms, that firm is just like able to whatever, take advantage of consumers. But you know, in a bigger economy, there would actually be firms competing with each other, and so other firms would say like, no, come to us, we're not going to sort of take advantage of you. And that competition could, you know, make the firm doing bad things go away. That's a very like Chicago view of the world.
Yeah.
But
we're gonna kind of give an opposite version of,
okay,
of
nice,
what
nice
can happen in general equilibrium.
Yeah.
So here, I want to say, you know, in partial equilibrium, we think it's good that creators who are creating content people like can sell products that make people more excited about the content they like, makes everyone happier.
Yeah.
The reason we might think that is we might worry about that in kind of general equilibrium is that we think, okay, well, then what other producers are out there looking at these sort of motives for moving products,
okay,
and then are going to create content with the express purpose of the monetizing part,
okay,
which perhaps we might think leads to not as rosy outcomes.
Okay, I'm curious how you paint this picture.
We're now going to be descending into the grimmer part of the episode.
Okay.
And I've got another question for you.
Okay.
What is the weirdest thing that you've placed a bet on? and I know you have some weird ones.
Yeah, I have placed some. I think my favorite bet that is currently outstanding right now, I have a bet with a friend that it's a 30-year bet. I think we're about 1 year into it. And it's whether or not Mark Zuckerberg will be divorced or married to his current wife in 30 years.
Okay.
And I have the side that if at any time he and his wife, current wife, get divorced,
uh-huh,
I win 1/1000th of my friend's household salary at that time.
Household salary.
Household
not just
salary.
Individual.
There was a lot of debate about this because my wife is a lawyer, and so it was a lot of like, it was key.
So you had her look over the details before?
No, it was very important to the person I was betting against that it was household, not individual salary.
I see.
So if we make it 30 years and there's no divorce, then I pay him 1/1000th of my household salary.
Okay. Okay. That is an insane bet.
Yeah. I have more.
But
do
I feel
want
that
more?
You have the better. Yeah. You hit me with another one.
Yeah. I also agree. I think I do have the better.
Yeah.
The better. I mean, obviously, I think I have the better side of this. I made a bet with one of my good friend's girlfriends. Or she's a good friend, too, now. But at that time, she was more of a friend's girlfriend. Now she's a good friend. I bet on whether Taylor Swift would be married to Travis Kelce by the end of the year. And I had yes on that side, and that was like, I don't know, 2 years ago, a year ago. So I did not win that
bet. So that bet is resolved, I see.
That bet is resolved.
Dominic cutting in from the future. Sorry we didn't actually talk about the engagement. We recorded this episode literally the day before the engagement. So this is me from the future being like, whoa, I can't believe they're engaged. That's so crazy. I still lost the bet because it was the previous year.
And I have like a group of friends in grad school where we usually have a pool on the Nobel Prize, like which institutions.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about why from sort of an econ-y perspective, like what are the reasons that someone might want to place a bet?
Yeah. So I think the modal reason I place a bet is just like fun. So I guess you could get like utility from the bet itself. Whether I win or lose, it's a good time to like, you know, every time there's Mark Zuckerberg, there was like a New York Times article about Mark Zuckerberg and his home, and my friend sent it to me and was like, I'm feeling pretty good about the bet. So I feel like that's just going to be funny
like
for 30 years.
It's kind of like making something potentially boring, like interesting.
Yeah. And I feel like that's what people say about like sports betting all the time, which I have done as well, where it's like, I don't really care about this, like, you know, Pac-12, rest in peace, basketball game at night. And so I'm going to like, you know, put $20 on it.
Yep.
So I think that's one. I mean, I think a second one is just you think you're going to win. You think, you know, you have the sort of better side of the bet. And so it's not about utility you get from the bet, but it's that you think that this is like a whatever.
Which on the Mark Zuckerberg bet, you're thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, as well. So, yeah, the Mark Zuckerberg bet is two. Yeah, I get both of these things in the Mark Zuckerberg bet. I guess the last thing that comes to mind, which is maybe some version of two and one, I'm not sure, is like, I feel like there's like addiction. And I'm not exactly like it feels sort of related to both one and two, is that like you get utility, you need to like, you know, fill the addiction, so you get utility itself from the bet. You maybe also have like irrational expectations about your you know, ability to win the bet, but it feels slightly distinct, and I think the way that we write those models in economics are usually a little bit distinct as well.
Yep. I'm going to add one other reason. So you've said the first two I had in mind, kind of just like make something interesting.
Yeah.
You have better information than the person on the other side of the bet, or you could just be fundamentally risk-seeking. And risk-seeking means in economics, that means that you'd say your marginal utility per dollar is increasing. So you value your 10th dollar more than you imagine your first dollar.
Yeah.
And broadly, we assume or like we think that it makes more sense if that you are decreasing in your marginal utility.
Yeah.
That for most people, the first $1,000 they make, going from zero to $1,000 is probably more meaningful than going from $10,000 to $11,000.
Yeah. Or like, I feel like with bigger numbers, it's like super, where it's like going from like making $50,000 a year to $100,000 a year matters like way more to how happy I am than going from $1 million a year to $1,050,000. Like,
Yep. That's a better example.
But you're saying this is like risk seeking, just to be clear, is then the opposite. It's like saying over some set of numbers, like you'd actually rather have the sort of like difference at the bigger numbers matter more.
Yeah. If you're risk seeking, the difference at the bigger numbers matter more. And the reason that translates into what we would call like risk seeking is, I guess we're going to get into Jensen's inequality here, but I'm going to do just like a little intuition. So the intuition kind of with Jensen's inequality is, say I'm thinking about a bet of like $100 with 50% probability or $200 with 50% probability. So the fair thing would be a certain payment of $150.
Yeah.
That's kind of like equal. An insurer would happily give me that bet if I wanted it.
Yeah.
But if that second $100 is sort of less valuable to me than the first $100, then when I'm like weighing those 50-50, it's actually going to be worth a little less to me than $150 because I'm sort of placing a heavier weight almost on that like lower side of the bet. That's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
But if instead I valued the high thing more than the low thing, I'm maybe not quite nailing this, but maybe close enough.
I guess the important thing for the listener too is like, if that made no sense, that's fine.
That's fine. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's like, if that made no sense, then like, you've now realized the limits of utility theory.
But I think broadly, when we think about like betting and why people bet, I think most economists feel like the idea that people are fundamentally risk-seeking is like not a very compelling explanation.
Okay.
So probably we think what's going on is more these other things we've talked about, like A, addiction,
yeah.
but also just like adding some level of like interestingness, like we get utility kind of from the experience
yeah.
of the bet. And or we think we have more information
yeah.
than who's on the other side. So pulling it back to marble racing. So when something like Yella's Marble Run takes off and you have so many eyes looking towards marble racing,
yeah.
we should expect that other people are going to start wondering how they can make money off this enterprise too.
Okay.
And so one approach is a competing monetizable YouTube account.
Yeah.
But this is kind of tough because you saw the production value
yeah, no, it was...
for Yella's videos.
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredibly high.
Yeah.
And the channel surely works and is so engaging because it's like not entirely profit motivated. Like I'm
yeah.
sure you wouldn't. I think it feels hard to compete on that dimension.
And probably just like they've learned a lot from doing a bunch of these videos. They paid a bunch of the fixed cost to like having this infrastructure that would be really hard to
yes.
reproduce. Yeah.
So now I'm going to show you another type of marble racing video.
Okay.
If you want to come over to my computer.
Okay. Yes. We are no longer in YouTube. We are in a much sketchier looking website where I saw something about depositing Bitcoin. So I think I may know where this is going. Okay, we have a AI looking person. Yeah, it's a real person or an AI person?
I think he could be real.
Check out Dexter Bets. Let's keep it going.
A real person. Okay, it's like he's kind of like in a studio.
Let's see what's next.
Oh, and then there's gonna be a marble race, but it's a. Oh, it's kind of like a metallic track. Again, do you think those are real marbles or is that AI?
I think they are real marbles.
Okay.
So now the black marble wins the race. Green marble is in the second place.
So this announcer who's announcing this race
nice
is soliciting bets. So I could have
oh, that okay.
on any of these marbles.
I see. Yeah, there's some stuff on the screen which I was not paying attention to. But yeah, so it's people placing bets.
The race has just finished, and it's showing us how many people won, how much money they different people won. I'm gonna get
it's also
of this
crazy
now.
That guy seems like it seems much less fun. That guy seemed kind of like bored with the whole enterprise.
Yes. So this is also it's not like low production value exactly. Like they do seem to have if it is real, like they do seem to have kind of an elaborate marble racing like track and they do have an announcer who's doing stuff.
Yeah.
But it does not have the same sense of like fun or whimsy.
No, no. It's like yeah, pretty serious guy. Almost sounded bored.
Yeah, he did not seem like he wanted to be there.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. You said you like bets. You do some sports betting. Would you place a bet on this? And why not?
So I think the like it definitely seems maybe illegal. I don't know. Like the like anything where you're moving money into Bitcoin seems like there's probably a reason.
Let's
for
say
that.
It's legal.
Okay. I was also pretty off put by the like not very fun kind of like I think when you okay so here's a good maybe like when you go to a casino and there's a bunch of people like playing slot machines
yes
and they're kind of like so often they're like you know older people and they're not looking like they're having a great time and you're kind of like oh that's kind of a like bummer
yeah
I feel like I got a little bit of that vibe from that video
yeah.
in a way that would like make me not want to place bets. I think if you told me in the you showed me the first video and you told me in the abstract like you can bet on these
yeah
I think like I'm not exactly sure I think I might say yes
yeah
I feel like
yeah.
that's a pretty fun concept of like betting on those. I feel like the actual implementation of that which is this felt like a lot
yeah
sadder in practice.
I also kind of want to talk about you were asking like is this AI is this real
yeah
I think maybe that's a reason you might worry
yeah,
about
yeah that's true that the like the it's all fixed. It's
yeah,
like,
so we've talked about, you know, And a reason you might want to bet is because you think you have more information than the market. Here, a reason you might not want to bet is if you don't trust that it's like a fair market.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Because, I mean, even if it is totally real and not AI, like, there's, you can just weight marbles differently. You can put little magnets in things. There's so many, like, ways in which you can make this not a fair market. And if it's, like, totally unregulated, I feel like they probably are doing things like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if you think this is sketchy, Dominic, we're going even further.
Oh, my God. No.
I am literally paying for a VPN service right now so that we can access online gambling sites, which the United States has barred from operating here.
All right. Let's go. That's so, actually crazy that I feel like we're not barring much these days.
Yeah. Well, have you heard of a website called 1xBet?
No, I have not. I have not.
So 1xBet is a sportsbook website.
Okay.
You can bet on just about any sport you can think of here.
Okay.
And so I'm going to show you. I want you to specifically take a look at the offerings in terms of marble events to bet on. And you can read. Okay. So this is 1xBet.
Okay.
So there's like lots of different sports you can do. And you can watch these live sports. The streams don't seem to work for me. I suspect maybe I need to put in credit card information to access the streams.
So there are like a lot of legitimate sports.
A lot of
here,
sports.
Like football, cricket, basketball.
Yeah.
But I assume there's going to be
of these.
Marble football, marble golf, marble shooting, marble fidget spinners, marble billiards, marble waves curling. There's a lot more.
There's that was just like a bunch of sports.
Marble MMA. I mean, come on. That's just.
I did try to watch these and I was unable.
Okay.
That's
so ridiculous.
Okay, so you're looking through these.
Yeah.
Marble MMA. You might ask, like, what even is marble volleyball?
Yeah. I mean, if they're able to keep a ball in the air.
And also,
I would for sure watch that, yeah.
Yeah, and can you look at, like, can you tell me what these, like, competitions are called and, like, some of the teams that are competing in
this is the
marble volleyball?
International Volleyball League.
Okay.
We have Brazil versus Argentina. I mean, rivalry match. USA-Germany. Uruguay-Brazil. I mean, a lot of great
This is
contests.
Within marble volleyball.
This is, yeah, within marble volleyball.
And so you might wonder, like, okay, what is marble volleyball?
Yeah, that is.
And so let's Google International Volleyball League marble.
Okay.
And let's click on a few of these. So there are, like, a bunch of websites come up. 1xBet are the top ones, but there's some other. They do... Let's click on one of these.
Okay. I would love to see a clip. Because if they actually keep a ball in the air, that'd be incredible. So this is another website, and it has the same matches. So it's not just like one book.
It has the same matches.
Up. Yeah.
Do you notice anything about the website look?
It does look very similar.
Does sure look to
it
be
does look very
exactly
similar.
The same.
Okay, so maybe they're not actually distinct.
Here, let's
books.
Try another one. Betwinner.com. See what this one looks like.
Okay, is it gonna look this? It looks the same. I like how they're all slightly different colors.
Yeah, they have all chosen different colors.
But they
should
do
we do
look
one more?
Same.
Should we also do line bet just to see?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A slightly more green, but the same exact.
Kind of just the same
format. Yeah.
Wrapped website over and over. On none of them could I access the stream.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I kind of set this conversation up by saying you could imagine a content machine that is based on pure extraction.
Yeah.
Like, what's the cheapest way we can get money out of users? And I think 1xBet is the answer to that. I think it's like the most extreme version of content for this type of purpose.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, this is a much different setting and a much less extreme example, but there's this old, like, adage, which I'm going to get wrong, where it's like, it's not the people who went to go get gold in the gold rush who got rich. It's like the people who sold the shovels to the people trying to dig in the gold rush, where it's like, maybe not the people putting on the marble. I mean, maybe the marble raising people have gotten rich, but it's the people who, like, set up the book to bet on the marble races that have gotten rich.
Yeah.
But so many questions about, like, you know, even if these are like fair contests, which I guess is taking that for granted.
Yeah,
like,
we're going to get into that.
Okay. Yeah. Like, what are the fees on this? Like, what is the, like, sort of.
Yeah.
They call it, what, like, the juice or whatever. I'm sure it's probably crazy in these markets.
So we're now going to shift a little bit away from marble racing and kind of just talk about 1xBet and these betting markets.
Yeah, okay.
So what even is this company? I'm going to have you read just a little bit of an article from Josimar about 1xBet.
Okay. Yes. Title of the article is Child's Play, and then a joint investigation by Josimar, Bellingcat, and Bellingcat has found that 1xBet, official betting sponsor of FC Barcelona, PSG, Serie A, and CAF, is organizing and giving odds on hundreds of thousands of games per year involving fake teams and children as young as 14.
Yeah, so it's some dark stuff. I'm going to have you... So it turns out that 1xBet has done like a bunch of illegal stuff. They're banned in a lot of countries, including the U.S. But what they've managed to do is like move countries and create tons of these different shell websites that access the same book. So it's actually quite hard for regulators to get them like meaningfully shut down.
Oh, wow. Yeah. They were also like big enough to be a sponsor of Barcelona at one point, I guess.
They are currently.
Wow.
Until 2027, I believe.
Wow.
So here, I think we have like the nightmare answer to the question, what if we actually designed sports with the pure goal of providing something to bet on?
Yeah.
Let me show you a little bit of this Bellingcat article. I'm going to show you some of the other sports.
Okay.
These are some of the other sports that are available that you could bet on, the streams that you could bet on 1xBet. Can you kind of describe... like the vibe of what you're seeing here.
It's more of that like very dystopian versions of sports, kind of like what I was saying with the marble thing. And so there's like a screen of people playing different sporting events. It almost looks like AI, but I think it's not. I mean, I guess I think it's not. But like people playing table tennis, people playing like indoor 2-on-2 soccer, people playing volleyball. They don't look like they're trying. I mean, maybe they're trying kind of hard, but not particularly hard. There's some people playing hockey. Yeah, it's weird. And there's no crowds. They're all in like these like sort of empty, like, frankly dystopian-looking places.
I'm going to have you read just a little bit more. It's from the same article.
Okay. Dimitri played 5v5 games in 1xBet's Bundesliga. League for about a week before realizing it was so sketchy and that you don't want to be part of that. Adding that some games are fixed, I'm totally sure of that. While his team was not directed to win or lose a game, players were instructed not to score more than 5 goals in matches. We knew that if you score 5 goals, you don't score anymore. 5 goals was the maximum, and if you scored more, you would get less money. It's not like the Bundesliga is not like the German. I think that's like the German.
It's like top. 1xBet's version of that. They are just like hiring amateur people, not even really athletes, to like play these games.
I see.
For these streams.
So that people
so that there's something for people to bet on.
I see. And that I guess it's sort of, I mean, I've never gone this deep. It sort of makes sense. Like I've heard of people betting on like, you know, crazy fourth tier soccer games, but like still like fourth tier soccer games or like, you know, whatever, squash or whatever, but like still like professional level stuff. I guess the sort of like, you know, I've never gone down this rabbit hole, but like inevitable thing is like you're gonna want, if it's 2 a.m. and there's like no time zone in which it makes
or
sense.
Or when it's the pandemic, when I think these sites got really, really big.
Is when they started doing it. Okay. Yeah. Like, you just want to have something. And if you really, really want to bet, you can start just creating leagues.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And so if you're profit-seeking bookie who's wanting to set up these sites and you're seeing, hey, actually a lot of people seem really interested in this marble racing thing. Now you have a betting vehicle that is even less costly than paying 6 real humans to play a game. So maybe it would be maybe it's kind of inevitable that marble racing would get co-opted by people with like very, very bad intentions.
Yeah, it feels like it's just like, I can't overemphasize the like extent to which it people do like in the game feel sort of disinterested in the game itself. Yeah. In a way that like, again, you know, I have sports bet before. I've sports bet on like, you know, crazy college games that like, you know, I just something was on TV. If, you know, putting $10 on it would make it more entertaining. But if it didn't feel as bad because like the people in the game actually cared. Like this feels like it's, I don't know how you. I mean, it seems like it's only catering to addicts because like there's no other way you could sort of watch this and like want to bet on it if it's.
Yeah. So there's really good reporting on this from Josimar and Bellingcat, and I'll link the okay. articles in the show notes. If you're interested, definitely encourage you to read. But I just, kind of went down this rabbit hole and thought it was super interesting thinking about, like, why these things happen, like, should we expect them to happen, and why they're so hard to kind of regulate away this problem.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, for me, I mean, I guess I have been sort of pro-neutral sports betting. I think increasingly become negative as, like, more of the evidence has come out on what the legalization of sports betting has done to, like, young men in particular. But this, this feels like this was news to me that there are these crazy, like, I knew people bet on, like, the crazy sports in Europe in the middle of the night or in Asia in the middle of the night in the U.S. because, like, you want to bet on something, but I didn't realize there were, like, full sporting events set up entirely for the purpose of betting in which, like, everyone involved in that sporting event looks so disinterested in the event itself.
Yeah, it's grim, and it's tough because, like, I think I totally share your feeling that there are, like, there's, like, a time and a place for betting for sure, and, like, obviously, like, I don't think there's anything morally wrong with betting. I think it's fun. I think it makes sense, but, like, it's hard to set up the law in a way that lets you do the fun part without letting, like, really predatory actors sort of take advantage of, like, the very bad parts. And I think that's why it's a tricky issue.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is – I was not ready for
this. So that's Marble Racing.
Yeah, yeah. I was ready for, like, the Love Island again where we just, like, whatever. But this is good.
That's all I have. So I guess it's time. it's time for your rating. How economics is marble racing?
So I guess it's kind of a bummer where we've ended that. I don't know if that's really anything about economics at all.
It's a bummer.
But we did cover a lot of economics. I think we got into the sort of like why do people place bets, which I think is a very economics question. It's a very finance question too. There's like a literature in finance, which is like, why do people ever trade in the stock market if, you know, there's professional traders and you're just like, you're always making sort of losing bets. Why do you sort of trade in the face of that? So I think that's a very economics-y, finance-y question. I feel like there's this, we talked a little bit about whether, like, where utility comes from and like why you like certain products. That's pretty economics-y, maybe shoehorned.
Maybe a little philosophy. Maybe a little shoehorned in.
Yeah. So I feel like that's all fairly economics-y. I guess it maybe does feel like the critique you had of my economics was like it does feel like it's taking something that has a little bit of economics in it and sort of emphasizing the economics pieces rather than something whose essence is economics. Like I feel like the essence of marble racing. You know, we went down the betting, we got sad, but, like, the essence of marble racing is, like, the joy of, like, watching these marbles go down the track and, like, I don't know. I feel like after the first half of recording this episode, I was like, I might go watch some marble racing. I don't know. And maybe I will.
And I think you should.
Yeah. And I think that there's something pure and, you know, somewhat I think the economics of, like, how they're able to make money to put on those marble races, I think is pretty interesting. Yeah. We talked about that. And I think that's like, I think you kind of convinced me. Yeah, I had mostly thought of like a lot of sort of like monetization of people's attention to be negative. And this is a way in which like they're actually producing something that's like fun and interesting. And it's cool that we have the tools for them to be like make money from that and be able to do more of that.
Yep.
In a way that like, you know, YouTube might talk about itself as like democratizing entertainment. Like that actually feels like they're doing like.
Feels like the promise of YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So anyway, that's a lot of economics-y things, I guess. And so maybe in light of that, I'll give it maybe like a 7 out of 10.
Okay. I'll take a 7 out of 10 for sure. I thought you might go lower.
People have been upset about the ratings. I guess they think they're too high. Maybe because we're too like amenable to the idea that things are.
Yeah. There's a kind of a problem here where whenever we explain the premise of this podcast to other economists, they say things like, "Well, but everything is economics. Yeah. Isn't that kind of trivial to say whether something's economics or not?" The answer is literally always yes.
Yeah. But we have an idea. We have an idea to try to discipline ourselves.
Yes. So while Dominic and I might be too easy, perhaps you guys can enforce some discipline. So I think we're going to start doing, after the episode releases on Monday, we'll give you guys a couple days to listen, and then we'll do some sort of like Instagram poll. And if you think we're wrong and we are just being too nice to each other, and in fact, it's actually kind of bullshit and these things are not economics, you can weigh in on Instagram.
Yeah. And Cassie, here's one thing we didn't talk about, but one thing I've been thinking about.
Okay.
Should we also make it a competition between us?
Oh, competition. Score?
I don't know. And then maybe we like add them up over the season.
Okay.
And then loser has to do some punishment, like fantasy football.
Okay.
I don't know what it would be.
I love
something
it. Yeah.
To really raise the stakes.
Let's do that. But I'm going to start going tougher on you, Dominic. I will go tougher on you.
Oh, just try to convince the people, you mean? Because like it's not our grades that matter.
It's only the people's grades that matter.
I see.
The
people decide the punishment. Or like, no, we will decide the punishment. Let's be clear about that. The people decide who gets punished.
Okay. I like this idea. Let's do it.
Okay.
But you still
could be mean, like, in the episode, you could just be like, that was totally
not economics. Yeah, it can be more aggressive.
Exactly. Which, like, depending on how bad the punishment is, when it's crunch time at the end, maybe we start doing.
Yeah, I'm going to start picking topics that are like.
Yeah.
The stock market. Is it economics?
That is a good. I don't know, whatever.
We'll figure it out.
Economics?
Okay. We will see you guys in a couple weeks. Bye.
See ya.
Be-o.